Hi, welcome to the Beyond Blocks podcast, a podcast about Drupal, PHP, open source, and related software development topics. I'm Oliver Davis, and today I'm here with my guest, Rob Allen. Hi, Rob. It's great to hear from the show. Can
Hey Oliver, good to see you.
you share a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm an independent API consultant working mostly in the PHP space, though with a bit of Go and Python thrown in because it's very difficult to be single language nowadays. Yeah, self-employed, enjoying myself, doing lots of interesting projects, fairly busy at the moment. Mostly in e-commerce and banking seems to be the areas I end up in.
Interesting. Yeah, I've seen you do a couple of talks at the PHP Southwest meetup recently. And I know you've mentioned a few times there about insurance clients and things in that sort of area. So.
Yes, it comes up a lot. I quite like, for want of a better phrase, legacy projects because I think that they've already proven their worth in the marketplace. And I like working on things that are providing value to customers or to the business in some form or another. And those sort of projects tend to come my way. Yeah, you mentioned PHP Southwest there. I do quite a lot of speaking as well. So I talk at conferences and attend conferences a fair amount.
So you have strong opinions on the whole sort of rewrite versus rebuild versus iterate approach then.
Yes, up to the point where my employer pays me. So, in general, I think that rewriting is the wrong approach nearly every single time. It's fairly rare that anyone actually understands what successful software is actually doing and all the bugs that are fixed in there due to business processes evolving over time. I think it's incredibly dangerous to throw away a working code base just because you don't like its shape or it's written in the wrong language or something like that. They seem rather silly things to do. I would far rather iterate to improve an application or a code base of some form. Or if you really, really, really must replace it, then I would tend to follow the strangler pattern and slowly extract bits out of it into a new product or new language or whatever. So basically do it slowly and carefully. And you know, I would extract as I have new features to write. That would tend to be my approach because you know, there's a big risk, isn't there, that you know, you do this big rewrite or this big refactor or whatever, and you're not adding new features or new benefits to your customer base. Allows your competitors to catch up.
I think I go back to the browser wars with things like Internet Explorer and Netscape. And one tried to rebuild everything from the ground up, and the other one continued iterating, and we are where
Now you're showing your age.
we
Yes, the whole Netscape 4 to Mozilla 5 was most definitely the obvious case study in how a rewrite can go terribly, terribly wrong in terms of the marketplace, even if the resultant code base was noticeably better.
I think it was interesting. I was doing some technical interviewing recently with the customer, the client interviewing for a developer, for an in-house developer. And one of the things we asked them was about migrating modules, particularly Drupal modules from Drupal 7 to Drupal 8 or Drupal 9 or 10 now. And we asked them about the process of doing that. And a lot of them just said, yeah, we'll just rewrite it and throw the old one away. And I was like, quite intrigued by that because there's so much business logic usually involved in a lot of these things and things that wouldn't be obvious to everybody. And I'm at the end of doing a 777 to 10 migration at the moment. And I'm finding so many little nuances in things where it works like this, but it doesn't when this happens. And when that happens, then this little thing happens. And luckily, I've got some access to the original code base I'm migrating from. So I'm trying to sort of pick little bits of the business knowledge out here and there and reuse it rather than try to do it blindly and do it from purely from the outside. So yeah, it's not quite completely separated, but I do try and reuse stuff where I can. I suppose that's where you get into things like adapters and different hexagonal architecture and other fun things later on when you start to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really good example of how it works, right? This happens in this case nearly all the time, but sometimes the other thing happens. It's so incredibly common in every app in the world. And the reason that it happens has been lost to time. The chances that
Exactly.
you can get someone currently in the business to tell you all those little rules is essentially zero. Because literally nobody remembers. And now you're down to, does the git commit message actually tell you the reason why, or does it just say what they did?
One of my favorite
Difficult.
sprint git commit messages recently just had to sprint 50. I was like, yeah, that's useful.
Yeah, that's irritating. We like good commit messages. There's an awfully good
Yes.
article on how to write them well somewhere, but I'm very much in favor of a git commit message that tells me why this was done or things like that. It's really tempting to see ones that just refer back to the ticket
Yes.
on some weird assumption that the ticketing system and the project within that ticketing system will still be current in 2 years' time, which boggles my mind as well. Things are
Yes.
so impermanent that pretty much the only things you can trust is what's in the source code and what's in the revision history of that source code.
Yeah, we're migrating from Jira to Azure DevOps on a project at the moment. So of course all the references and the commit messages will be out of date as soon as we move. And the code base on the go at the moment has still got references to the previous agency and developers ticket in system, which means nothing to me at all. So yeah, all that
Yes.
is lost.
Yes.
And then we've got things like custom language switcher. It's like, why do we have a custom language switcher? Because there's a language switcher in Drupal anyway. Why do we have one? And I have an assumption why there is one, but I don't know that to be true because it's not written down anyway. And some of the documentation is like, it's in this file. Good, that's helpful. I could have figured that out for myself. And here's a screenshot of it, which was the old theme. So that's wrong either. So we've got the what, we don't have the why. And I think that's the crucial bit that usually gets missed, I find.
Yeah, and it's also quite hard to write, which is why people skip it, no matter how useful it is. I think getting more experience, I was going to say getting older, but that's not really the right phrase. As you do this for longer, I think you start picking up on what you wish you had written in the past. You're more likely to start writing that for your future self. But you can't tell someone this. This is one of those things where you have to experience it to actually understand why good commit messages matter, why comments actually explain the why rather than the how or the what are actually valuable. I came across someone who said that they've got an edit from above that there should be no comments in their code base because the code should be self-documented. And I've heard that before. I've never actually seen a company try to enforce it, but which made me laugh. But it does show the problems around comments because comments that do describe the code are practically useless and go out of sync with what the code actually does very quickly. But from that point of view, the edit makes sense. There's literally no point in writing a comment that explains the, sorry, that describes the code you've just written. Like, yay, thank you. Now I can read that code. And if that code is written so badly that I can't understand what that code is doing, then that code needs to be refactored. That's all perfectly acceptable. But why does this block of code exist in this code base? Or why did we feel the need to write this class or to extract this bit into a separate class? That information is not described by the code itself. And that is very useful to have in the code base somewhere. Good
Yeah,
comments are good.
if that typical thing around, yeah, returns true and then returns false, blow it, or returns an int, returns a string. And as soon as you see one comment that's wrong, you'll just ignore the others as well. So they all need to be correct, if not. But,
Yes, that's true. And the later versions of PHP have helped us a lot in things like that as well. Because the dot blocks, for instance, have now moved into type ints. And that's vastly improved the risk of things like that going out of date. I'm sure we've all seen code bases, particularly if you're going back to Drupal 7, where the dot blocks list of types doesn't match what the code actually does with those parameters anymore.
Yeah, I tend to rely on the native types as much as I can. So I'll say this is a string, but then from especially using my PHP stan, I'm able to say it's a non-empty string or something. If I'm adding something more to it, then that's when I add the dot block just for the sake of it. Generally my
PHP
approach.
stands amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, he's a lot like all the project, like pretty much every project now, at least on parts of the code base. But yeah, the other thing I use a lot is either technical design documents or ADRs, so architectural decision record documents. I think again they're quite good for capturing the why. Why have we got this thing? What else have we tried? Why have we done it this way?
Yes, I've just started a new project a couple of weeks ago now and was delighted to discover that there are ADRs for this project. Mildly confused to discover they were in a separate repo, but that was fine once I found the separate repo. But that kind of makes sense because they apply to multiple repos in and of themselves. So the project is made up of multiple smaller apps. So a separate documentation repo arguably makes sense. But yeah, ADRs are wonderful. The description is really helpful to, oh yeah, we did think about that and the other and this, and we made this decision. Some of them I disagree with, particularly around the database naming choices I've come up with, but practically it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. As long as I know what they are, I can then understand what's going on. Yeah, very helpful. The rest of the documentation is in Notion. I have very, very different opinions about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've written ADRs and design documents just as markdown files and things and put them in a repo. But yeah, having a separate one is interesting because usually I've got like a Drupal site and a Fractal version, or maybe there's another separate library or something that I'm using. So I suppose then, yeah, it's still codified somewhere. You know, if it's again, kind of like what we were just saying, like if it's in Confluence or Notion or somewhere, then it's essentially just going to get lost as it moves between different companies or different developers anyway.
Yeah, it can be difficult, but the documentation is a difficult problem. This particular project has got separate clients that are written in different languages, and one of them is a C++ client. Standalone application runs on Windows, etc. And the team building that are completely independent from the team building the web APIs, for instance. So putting the documentation into the web APIs repository will never ever be found by the C++ team. And they're not going to think to go there for starters. And if they are, they're not going to edit it because it's not their repo. So now they're less likely to be keen to ch find stuff. And then you've got the other type of documentation where you've got people who are not coders who need to read it, write it, comment on it, have opinions on it, and now our repos are completely the wrong place to put that stuff, practically, because you're never ever going to get the product owner to edit your source code. They're not going to use GitHub. They're not going to use Git. That is just not going to happen. Or your sales team, or your marketing team, or whoever else needs to have input into the feature thing we're building. There's a reason we don't use a code base for getting visuals signed off. It's just the wrong way to do it. And then how do you do that? Notion's not a terrible solution in some ways because everyone can edit it. Nearly everyone can find it. I mean, there are problems related to Notion and which account is logged in at which time, which probably doesn't affect people who work as an employee in the company. But I've got three or four clients that all use Notion. So whenever I see a link in a Slack or something and I click it, I'm invariably in the wrong account in the Notion app. And it says can't find document all the time. And I'm kind of like, surely we can sort this sort of problem out. But that's a design decision on there on Notion's part in terms of their URLs. Very difficult to switch against them and put them into different browser profiles and things like that. But the
Yeah,
right
I've
people
got.
appear to be commenting on the right documents, so they're doing something right.
Yeah, that's the main thing. But yeah, I've seen the same thing. I have it sometimes with different Google accounts and things as well. I've got my Google Apps accounts and Gmail account. I've always lost the wrong one when I click a link to a form or something. So yeah, it's
Yes.
always happens. So
Exactly. It's mind-boggling.
what?
But nothing you can do.
No, not unless you work for Google or Notion. No, you're fine. So one of the talks you did for PHP Southwest, you came a few recently, was on Ubiquitous Language. So this maybe comes, we talk a little bit about this with documentation. So I guess would you consider that to be a form of documentation in itself?
Yeah, that's a good segue. Well done. Yeah, I think nearly everything related to software development that really, really matters is invariably about communication. Nearly everything that results in good quality software is because the communication worked. And three quarters of the errors are because the communication didn't work, practically. At least from my point of view. And ubiquitous language, or DDD, as in domain-driven design, and the concepts behind it all fall into this area that I'm interested in. So I have to back up slightly and talk a little bit about domain-driven design. DDD, awesome thing. Very big book. I don't know if you've read the book, Eric Evans's book from 2003.
Look on my bookshelf. I think I've got that one on there. I've got some tech books. I think the Clean Code. I've got the Refactoring book. I've got Continuous Delivery. It's not on that shelf anyway. I'll have to look for it.
Yeah, those are also good books. Well worth reading. Domain-driven Design by Eric Evans is a blue book, probably Anderson Wesley published, something like that. It's one of the professional series type books, and it's huge and it is extremely well written but quite dense. And it's divided into two halves. First half we sort of strategic stuff, and the second half is the tactical stuff. The tactical stuff is the more commonly bit you see written about. That's doing repositories, doing mappers, doing entities, doing value objects, all those sort of things that you've almost certainly heard about. The strategic stuff is way more about how you organize an architect project, how do you get a project to be successful. And that's way more woolly and hand wavy as a result. It's not totally surprising because it's got humans involved. Ubiquitous language falls into that half. It's all about strategic stuff, and it's all about making sure that we can understand each other. Don't know about you, but any project I work on, I'm not the expert in the problem. Pretty much. No, but I mean, I suppose if you're a GitHuber writing Git, writing a Git website, then probably you are semi-expert in that domain. But for the rest of us, you've referred to it earlier. I work a lot with insurance companies and things like that. Guess what? I'm not an underwriter. Never have been an underwriter. Never will be an underwriter because it sounds terribly boring.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the same sort of experience of working with either clients or working well for agencies and things. And yeah, you're dealing with people who are specialists in their area. We did with Institute of Actuaries once. I've worked with people in car insurance, events management people, charities and nonprofits. So they're obviously the experts in their area. And then arguably, you're the expert in the software development, software side of things. So yes, it's sort of people sticking in their own lane, but let them be the expert of their area. But yeah, you don't want to be referring to everything as a user if they're calling it a customer or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I quite like the word specialist. That's a good word. The DDD term is domain expert, but specialist is arguably a better word in some ways. But these people know what they're talking about, and we need to get that information in from them so that we can write the right software that actually solves a problem that either they need solved or that their customers need solved. Ubiquitous language, as you mentioned there, is all about using the same words that the specialists are using on our side as well. Our side means the developers or the builders or whatever. So my insurance people are using the phrase policyholders, then that's what they are. They are not customers, they are not users, they are policyholders. And then if I'm speaking to them, I will use the phrase policyholder. And no one's confused. Going back to my thing about bugs in software, confusion. They say some words, we hear some things slightly different, and we write a bug as a result, or we write a failure of the software. Not necessarily deliberate fault anywhere, but a miscommunication. Oh, I thought you meant this. Well, that's not what I meant. comes up so frequently. And an awful lot of DDD is all about trying to communicate, get that communication right. I think that's so interesting and such a difficult problem, and has to be done in small bits because it's a big topic otherwise, and then you get nowhere.
Yeah, there's some interesting things for my day job recently with people working on rail and then people working in bus using different terms to mean the same thing. So again, it's just I think it's patronage or patronage for bus, and then rail has got its own equivalent. I mean the same thing. It's just these different words. So we're trying to like, how do we define what the common word is for everybody to use, or at least so they can understand that what they mean when they're saying a certain word or a certain acronym or something.
Yeah, that's another really good example. So it happens absolutely all the time. And I can't remember where I read it, but someone said that if you pretend it's not happening, it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. It just means you're ignoring the problem. And it's so easy just to assume, make assumptions, and just carry on blindly. That mildly irritates me. I just posted into the Slack for my client because I've been working with them this morning. And I said, I realize this is a stupid question, but I'll feel like a complete and utter idiot if I don't ask it and I've got it wrong. And then proceeded to ask some question about DRM, which I know some stuff about, but I don't know enough in the specifics in this case. And it was helpful to get their answer because there were nuances that I was not aware of.
So it
Yeah,
wasn't a stupid question.
they say they're so stupid questions, but I bet I could come up with one.
Yeah, sure, I think of at least one a day, probably.
But equally, ignorance is, or it's not even so much ignorance, but the assumption that you know what they mean and then going away and doing that is problematic in and of itself. We were talking about how you authenticate things like JOPs, JWTs, and where your chain of trust is coming from. And I've made one set of assumptions that were completely and utterly different to the set of assumptions that the people on the C++ team made. This is a good time to find that out.
Yeah, especially if you're early, obviously, yeah, new pro early in the project, or yeah, best to do it at the beginning rather than doing that later on.
Exactly. Which comes back to that other truism, isn't it? That it's cheaper to fix things earlier in the process. And I can't remember where that comes from, but anyway, if you take the software development life cycle, it's far easier to fix something at the specification stage or at the definition stage than it is whilst you write the code, compared to when you find the problem in QA, compared to how expensive it is when you find the problem in production.
Definitely seeing David Lederman give talks, where he's got like a graph of the amount of time it takes to fix a bug or the cost of fixing the bug. Yeah, with something like that. So if you can fix it early, you turn in specification or like a unit test level to begin with, it's so much quicker to fix rather than, yeah, as you said, getting up the stage or into production where real users are maybe using the problem or experiencing the problem. And there's probably some element of cleanup to do if it's generating vouchers or incorrect things, or this you've got production data to clean up as well. Yeah, I assume it's yeah, well, I'm not sure what the original place, but I've definitely seen Dave have a slide of that in some of his talks.
Yeah, I've seen that too, and that talk is really good. So probably find it and stick it somewhere so people can find that because he's written good stuff there.
Yeah, watching Dave's talk from PHP UK yesterday with Laravel updates. So yeah, we've sort of been working our way through the PHP UK videos because most of them, I think, are online now.
Yeah, they've done really well this year. I've been impressed. It's normally
Yeah.
relatively slow to get the videos out from a conference, but PHP UK have knocked it out of the park this year, and they're all up as far as I'm aware. Most of them are quite good. Mine's up there too, of course.
So it was brilliant. I haven't watched yours yet. But then I saw it at PHP Southwest. So I don't know how much of it has changed since then, but I'm sure it was brilliant.
Thank you. Yes, it was very much a similar talk. Because that's the benefit of user groups. User groups are such a wonderful community resource we have within the PHP community and others where we get to try things out.
It's been good to see them mostly start up again since COVID, because with COVID and lockdowns, everything went online, and all the meetups from Zoom, and that yourself writing so many speaking, so much speaking online. Because we thought it's only going to be like a really short thing. So I started a blog post, and here are the talks I've done specifically during lockdown remotely, and turned into quite a long blog post. But yeah, a lot of them. So PHP Southwest was, I think, one of the first to come back. So that's gone back pretty steady. But then I've seen like Stoke is a new one that started up. Like they do a quarterly meetup. Brum
Nice.
PHP is back in Birmingham, I think, next month. PHP London I've been to recently. So it's nice to see them sort of starting to pop up again.
It
South
is.
Wales has been really quiet though. So we've done a couple since, but it's gone really quiet again recently. So I'm not sure what to do about that.
I assume they're struggling with community organisation as much as anything. I follow quite a lot of the Birmingham tech scene. Mostly because it's nearly local, if you ignore the hour commute because of the trains are so slow. But there's quite a lot of different tech there as well, and they've all mostly started back now. So the JS people are back. There's a management group as well, which is quite interesting.
That's interesting.
The Rust
Yeah.
people are back, the Go people are back. It's sort of definitely getting a bit more of the communities back to normal. Fusion's happening again, that's a good one. I'm enjoying that this
Yes.
year. Conferences, same thing. A lot more conferences are around now as well.
Yeah, I was up there for School of Code hackathon a couple of weeks ago, and there they were mentioning all the different groups that were going on. So and Bristol used to be about that as well with PHP and JavaScript, and we're going to some of the Bristol JS meetups. They've packed. South Wales used to be, we had a few, we had a Drupal group years ago, and then we've got the PHP group. So to start thinking about what we do, and there's Cardiff Gophers group. So yeah, well, to start thinking about that again. But at least we've got we used to have so many conferences as well. We used to have like South Coast and Northwest and I think Northeastern and Ancon for a while. And yeah, I think we'd like to see some more of those coming up again at some point. But I know Steve looked at doing a PHP Wales at one point, but I think it sort of went anyway. So
Yeah, I
maybe.
think a lot of it's related to the amount of volunteer interest you can get to actually go to the effort of creating a meetup and user group and then keeping it going, or creating a conference and all the associated commercial risks around that, which are obviously slightly greater than a user group in and of itself. And how long do you want to do it for? Like the PHP Northwest conference went for 10 years, I think. And that's a fairly long chunk of time. Of course, it shows how long the PHP community has been around now, because that feels like it's a bit in the past now.
Yeah, I was at the last one that I remember as a DrupalCon as well. So I remember going from Bristol to wherever DrupalCon was that year. It was in Barcelona. I think a load of us from Microsoft went, and then I flew back, and I flew to Manchester rather than back to Bristol. So I went and did the Northwest conference thing on the weekend, and then caught the train back. But they said that was the
Wow.
last one, which is a bit of a shame. But yeah, it'd be nice to maybe see a couple more of those come up again. But we'll see. But yeah, I
Yeah.
missed PHP UK this year, but it was last year actually. I remember saying that I'll probably will do this one then, sat here with real bad FOMO then, because like I'm missing out on all the stuff that's going on. Maybe next year I'll have to. So I didn't submit anything this year either, so I'll have to make sure I submit something talk-wise next year as well.
I think conferences are incredibly valuable for a couple of reasons. Number one is the content, the talk and whatnot. I know you could get the talks on YouTube. I know you can learn stuff by typing things into your ChatGPTs and reading stuff on Medium or whatever. But most of us don't do it very much. We're not very good at saying, now I will spend 4 hours of my time learning something new in my free time, because it's fairly rare that the average company gives you a day off on work time to just learn some stuff. It doesn't happen very often, but that's what a conference gives you. A conference gives you a focused block of time to learn something. Not only that, the tracks have been curated, so the list of things to learn are relevant to that conference. The organizers have chosen them probably because they're relevant to your industry and what you need to know. at least this year. So you get all those benefits of a conference through the curated tracks, the actual time that you get to do it. I think that's quite valuable in and of itself. And then secondly, of course, you get the people. One of the things about in-person conferences is that there are other people there. And I know developers claim to that they don't talk to people, but practically you've got to be a really good communicator if you want to be a senior developer anyway. All the senior developers, all the staff engineers are really, really good at communicating, both verbally and written. So, and a conference gives you the people. We call it the hallway track or something similar to that. But there are all these people here that you can talk to and learn from and make connections with. If we're going to be enterprising about it, we could say that we network with these people. But we don't tend to use that word down in the PHP community very often, do we? But the ability to meet people, talk to people, learn from them, that discussion is amazingly helpful. I certainly have got a lot out of it over the years I've been conferences, certainly.
Yeah, I think two things. I think, yeah, as you said, if you want to be more senior level, staff level, but also if you want to be a freelancer or a consultant, you're going to need to speak to clients and the customers. As thing there, I was on a sales call this morning, and like, so why do you want to, redo this app? What's wrong with the current one? What is having that type of conversation with people? So, yeah, need those skills, and yeah, on the people side, lucky to go to some of these places. I was in the DrupalCon in Lille a couple months, say a couple months ago, it was about 4 months ago now, was it October? And people were there. I'd done a talk for Pete. No, it was Drupal, NW Doug, the Northwest Drupal group, but it was online and people had seen me speaking at that. So I had a good chat with those. But specifically, I think PHP UK, I think Bo Simonson was there. Was it South Coast? I don't know, it doesn't matter. But we went to one of them, and I've been user of Sculpin for a while, which is the project that Bo started, PHP static site generator. So I was able to go to Bo, and so we'd spoken online, and he was living in the UK for a while, and being around Wales and things. So I was like, yeah, it's good to go up and for chat, and we still speak online every so often. But yeah, it's nothing, not quite the same as being able to go actually go up to somebody and sort of say hello and thank them for the work that they've done in particularly around open source as well. Bose at Sculpin, and I know you're involved in a few open source projects as well, some of which I use. So yeah, it's nice for to say thank you for doing that.
Yes, and it's amazing how generous people at conferences are with their time. It's a great leveler in a lot of ways. It doesn't really matter whether they are the, I don't know, the creator of PHP Unit, for instance. That Sebastian's just willing to talk to you. If you've got a question about PHP Unit or how you use it, he'll help you answer it. He's not set apart from the rest of us in that sense.
Yeah, I won't charge you these consulting calls. We're both at the conference in the hallway tracks. Yeah, for essentially a free consulting call by whoever just asked about
Yeah,
your project or testing or whatever.
and you learn so much from people who are not within the community like that as well. So I can be talking to someone who's working on some particular thing inside their company, and we're talking about a problem they've had, and suddenly I'm learning stuff as well, stuff that I would never have thought of about the way things are being done with PHP in their community or in their company rather. Going, oh, that's a good idea. And then that knowledge spreads. That's quite hard to get because so many people work in companies but are not sort of spreading their knowledge outside of that, other than when they're on a training day or at a conference where they're just chatting.
Yeah, I can see that. As I say, I was watching your talks on DDD at PHP Southwest and other things, and I come away from that and go, well, yeah, how do I interpret that, and how do I think about that on my project? And it's spawned a couple of daily emails about like, because when I think about DDD and setting boundaries and context and things, I tend to think of it in like a Slim app or a Symfony or a Laravel app, where things are just in one sort of global namespace, and you sort of restructuring it so that, we put all the billing stuff together and all the payment stuff together, the customer stuff together. Whereas in a Drupal situation, it's not quite common to have multiple custom modules. And then, like, maybe you'll have a billing module and a customer module or something. So I can sort of see how that separation works. But then There's other layers to that. And I was there about the other day that I deleted a function from a module that was no longer using it just to find out it was used by a different module, which wasn't fun, with no apparent connection. Even like that coupling should have been, logically, it should have been the other way around, in my opinion. But that was quite interesting. So it did sort of spur some thoughts off from then how I could apply some of these concepts to that. I've seen about, maybe it's another one of Dave's talks, talk about PHP 80, so architecture testing. It's like, how can I, again, it's just things to go on my list of things to look at or investigate, and how can I apply that to my projects?
Things like that are really interesting, aren't they? Because you're bordering on the difference in the tactical and strategic parts of DDD there, but coupling between logically separate thoughts or processes or things, the term in DDD is context. You try to avoid it because you try to avoid surprises. And that's a really good example. You know, you delete this function from this particular module. You think this module is in control of its own destiny. And then you discover some other module has delved deep into the source code of your module and started calling stuff you didn't know that they were doing. Oh, let's not do that. And the
Yeah,
whole
but
point
this
of
was.
separating these logically out is so that we don't get surprised.
Yeah, this, if I remember rightly, this was to do with making some sort of API request or pull request, request API or HTTP, some sort of HTTP request. It was getting, I think, with token, with a token. Maybe I'm misremembering, but we'd refactored use a different feed. And then we didn't need the token anymore. So I deleted it from that module just to find that the other module was using it. So I can see why, because we hear like try and don't repeat yourself and everything. So I can guess why they did it that way. But now, yeah, you're crossing boundaries. So like that module shouldn't rely on that module unless there's some sort of explicit or implicit dependency. Because you can say this module depends on this module. Or you structure them in such a way that that module lives inside that module, so you can have submodules and things. So there's other ways of doing it, but yeah, I can see how I can see the thinking there. But when you think about it from the DDD side of things, like they're different.
That's a good example of how the tactical gets conflated with the strategic. So, if talking about my DDD talk in particular, it was very much not code based. It was very much talking in terms of the thought processes about organizing the way you want to design this app and separate things out into different bounded contexts or whatever, and how we're going to communicate that information. And then you get that strategic idea that tactical idea that comes in. Don't repeat yourself, which is a really good one. Another one is Yagni. You ain't going to need it. They're really common and they're almost gospel truths now. I don't believe in gospel truths. I think you'll be really careful with things like that. Blanket rules are very, very dangerous. And don't repeat yourself is one of my favorite ones that I don't believe. It gets you into coupling situations where you probably were in too much of a hurry at the time. And there's another rule related to that, isn't there? I don't know if you've come across this one called copy paste once, copy paste twice, now we refactor. And I quite like that one. The whole idea that if you're now using the same bit of code three times, you probably need to rethink our design somewhere. But copying and pasting it once generally is not a problem. It's time after that where you start saying, now we have reuse that we really need to think about. And if we're using that bit of code over here when it belongs over there, then we definitely need to think about how we've structured our app as well, or whether we need a utility module or infrastructure module, as DDD will call it, to put that sort of support service work in. Lots of ways to skin the cat, but thinking about it helps an awful lot.
Yeah, I've definitely heard about like that three rule of three sort of approach. I've definitely heard about that before. Because yeah, still think I've heard about like early abstraction being the wrong abstraction or something to that effect. I can't quite formulate the whole thing, but premature abstraction is wrong. Premature is worse than the, I don't know. It's yeah, it's like don't abstract things too early to do sort of know what it is that you're doing.
Yes, same basic problem. It's very difficult to design in a vacuum.
So is DDD something they should use on any code base or any project, or does it depend on things like size or complexity?
I think the key tenets are important regardless, because it's all about communication and thinking about what belongs where and what is responsible for what. So this thing is responsible for that, this thing is not responsible for that. That sort of thinking, I think, is incredibly valuable no matter the size of the project. Obviously, once you get down to very small projects, then these decisions take no time whatsoever. It's all really quick, so you don't even notice you're doing it because it's such a small little thing. But the thought processes are valuable. The ubiquitous language concept, we understand what we're talking about. We're all using the same phrases and terminology to mean the same things. It's hard to imagine how you get anything done if you don't spend a little bit of time doing that. The amount of rework, the amount of bugs that you must get would drive me bonkers. It would be amazing. I'm a big fan of trying to understand enough that I don't screw up. It's not necessarily all very formal. I don't do the formal ceremonies, maybe, of DDD on all projects because projects are not necessarily big enough to need them. We don't have to have an expense storming workshop every single project or every single feature we're doing, for instance. But it's incredibly handy to have done some sort of thinking about where our bounded contexts are, all for every single thing we are doing. We might even call it bounded contexts. We might just call them modules or packages or something like that. But it's the same basic thing. We do some thinking about how we're going to organize our project before we build it. And we keep that in mind as we build. I think those are very valuable tenets and they're worth doing all the time. The formalities, as with project management, you need more of them as your project gets bigger.
Yeah, same as doing as any type of road mapping, or even just like TDD, or not even like also testing. It's investing that time up front to sort of know what you don't know, and then in theory that will save time long run because you'll get the right solution or less bugs or whatever. Yeah, it's definitely makes sense. Rather than just like, yeah, we're gonna go in and start coding, and then we'll see where we end up, and then you get in some nice spaghetti code mess type mess.
Yeah, exactly. Our big ball of mud, as we call it officially. It's dead easy, and of course we can refactor our way out of it, but our net, overall time is now bigger. It's just very difficult when you're less experienced or have done it fewer times, maybe it'd be a better way to phrase it, to realize that that time invested up front does have a tangible effect on the amount of time spent later.
Yeah, and I've
And
just
then
done
working out how
roadmaps.
much, yeah, roadmap's a really good example. Working out what needs to be done when, what can be punted till later, what really can't be punted till later, and understanding the scope of the problem are all really, really vital skills as you get more experienced and go up the seniority tree.
Any other sort of business benefits? Obviously, less time, fewer bugs, better communication, more standardized language. Anything? What other sort of benefits are there? We could.
Well,
If
that's a
someone was to
pretty
come to you
impressive
and say, "Can
list.
I do? Can I do TD? Can I do DDD on a project?" You know, which what other reason would you have to sort of try and sell them on it?
I mean, you covered the main ones, but by far the biggest one is you end up with a project that's fit for purpose. Your chances of producing a solution or software that actually does what the customer wants has increased tenfold. Well, that's just arbitrary. It's just significantly increased. You're way more likely to deliver a project that actually does what the customer needs if you have listened and understood what they said. And to do that, you need to have spoken the same language, you need to have understood the feature sets required and organized your code in a way that means you can actually build that stuff. It all falls in together, but the amount of projects that get out there, and they're not quite useful enough. And particularly in line of business apps that work inside a company, they're not quite as good as they could have been. And then you find that the staff who are using them have got really weird workarounds to problems.
Oh, yes.
Like they're copying stuff out of Excel into your app, and then they take it out of the app and do another Excel spreadsheet to run something that they then put the answer back into the app because the app doesn't do that bit. Things like that happen so frequently. And they're like, why are we re-keying this? Oh, because that bit wasn't done correctly, and therefore it's quicker to do it over here. And that's all because nobody communicated properly at some point. Well, not always, but 99% of the time, there's a communication failure early, which resulted in production of an app where it was now too expensive to fix. So therefore, you got what you were given.
Yeah, just thinking there's a financial hit side of that as well. Because if you're then going to say we've got this big ball of mud, we need to refactor it, and it's going to take X number of hours. The assumption is that the client is going to pay for those X number of hours, otherwise you'd be out of pocket. So yeah, it's in the client or customer's interest to, for you to get it right the first time if that's how you're billing. And or if you're doing a flat rate project, then I want to get it right the first time rather than spending time reworking what I've already written.
Yeah, and you can't always get that, which results in a project that stagnates. So let's say that, and what happens then is you've got your less than well organized code base that you have not been proactively keeping tidy. But as a result, you now need to add a new feature. And it turns out instead of it being a 2 day job, it's now a 2 week job. And now nobody can afford to do it. So now the feature doesn't get built. So what happens then over time? Your product lags behind your customers, or your competitors, sorry, or it becomes less and less fit for purpose. And that becomes a problem in and of itself. I had one client where the upper leadership noticed this and realized it was happening. Arguably one of the better clients I've ever had because they were so forward-thinking. The app was maybe 15 years old or so, something like that, going strong in the marketplace, clearly a market leader. But the upper leadership, the boss and CTO and whatever, had discovered and realized that adding new features was significantly slower than it used to be. And they were having trouble getting new features all the way through to production in sensible timelines, whatever sensible might mean to them. And one of the consultancy work I was doing for them was all about how do we get this project and this code base into a state where we will be fit for purpose for the next 15 years and stay as a market leader. It's hard work, it's not easy, but you have to be proactive about it. It doesn't happen by default. It has to, there's proactive thought required.
Yeah, it's getting out of that sort of startup mode, isn't it? That we can just deliver features quickly to begin with. And then as the app gets more complex, you're then almost tripping over yourself because you're worried the change, like deleting that function here, will affect that over there. And that's where I can see how A, good test suite, and B, some sort of rules around architecture testing or some way of validating essentially that things are still going to work once you've made that change, or not be worried that by writing that feature I've now broken everything else, which sometimes might happen.
It's difficult.
It
Long, long.
yeah
Sorry, come.
no, I was going to say if we want a project we don't have any of these things, what's a good first step to introducing some of this stuff?
Apply them on the next feature. So, assuming that this project is still moving forwards, you're going to create a new feature at some point. Work with better communication, better understanding, making sure this feature is what the customer or the client or the product owner actually wants. All those things can be applied to a feature. They don't have to be applied to the entire project, which is obviously too big to do. So the bit you're doing, do that bit better. Back to our old Boy Scout rule for the code base. Leave the code base in a better state than you found it. You can do the same at the architectural level as well. I'm going to do this one feature. I'm going to make the architecture of this one feature slightly better than the rest of the app. Do that enough times and you have got a better architected app.
Let's just come back to being agile. It wasn't in that iterative approach. Like, how can we do the next feature, the next sprint, better than the previous one? And if then, if let's say we'll put this new module over here and we're going to do these patterns and these rules, and we'll run PHP stan on it, we'll run PHP ET on it, and then over time we just keep building that part up and maybe potentially go back and refactor some of the other stuff as and when it needs it. But at the end of the day, that bit is working.
Yes, it's you
Yeah.
do it when you need it. Iterative always trumps in my world. It's so much easier to iteratively improve and make things better over time. When you touch them, that's the time to improve that bit. Let's not rewrite the core calculation engine bit now. But if we have to bug fix the core calculation engine, well, maybe we make it a little bit easier to understand the next time we need to bug fix the core calculation engine that everyone hates to touch because it's so important to the company. But we can't have code that is a no man's land, that is an area nobody wants to go, because that goes back to that stagnation problem.
Every project's got a bit that nobody wants to work on, or to, because it was written by previous person, or that person has now left, or a different agency, or it's using the wrong coding style, or something. I think every project has probably got something like that.
Oh, yeah, and you definitely need to attack them. You definitely need to move them from being in that state to being something you can maintain. Not easy, and it depends on the rest of the company culture as well.
Said earlier on, like if you just ignore it, it's not, it's still there. It's like a kid covering their eyes and going, nobody can see me now. It's yeah, it still needs to be addressed more proactively than just ignoring
Yes, if you want a long-lived project. Obviously, if you
it.
are doing a short-lived project where your goal is to get acquired, then it probably doesn't matter so much. But if you've got a project for the long term, then you need a code base that you can maintain over the long term. That's my place where I work, so it's way more interesting to me.
So you mentioned the blue DDD book. Aside from that, and then obviously your talk, any other good resources for DDD?
All of them. But there's a guy called, I think it's Vernon Vaughan, I think that's his name, called DDD Explained. That's a good book. InfoQ have got a free ebook. I think it's called DDD Explained or something like that. We can look it up and I'll give you the link to it. But that's also a really good book, good place to start. There's plenty of places out there, but that's the ones I would start with. I tend to be a go to the source material kind of person. So I will tend to do that. And practically, there's nothing wrong with starting a ChatGPT session and saying, tell me about DDD, and then start from there and start asking it more questions. You'll end up with enough key words that you could then go to the primary sources and actually understand them. That would also work fairly well. Can't help you much with videos because I'm not really a video watcher. So I don't really go to YouTube to find things out. But I'm confident that in addition to my talk, there are other good talks out there.
Yeah, I'm sure you could go on YouTube and find 100 videos, implement DDD in 3 minutes and 10 steps, or whatever. I'm sure there's loads.
Yeah, you don't want those, though. You want the concept ones, and they're slightly harder to find. Well, maybe that's just the way I think about it, but the concepts are way more interesting on all the technologies than the specifics of how to do it. Because the specifics don't tend to translate to your problem particularly well. The classic example, of course, is TDD. Now, you go and watch a video on TDD, and it shows you how to do a very, very nice write the code, show the failing test, refactor the code, show the green test in this lovely little isolated little problem.
Yeah,
And then you
build a
see your code
calculator.
base.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And now you're looking at your code base and going, well, how do I apply that to this?
Yeah.
And a good discussion on the concepts and what we're trying to achieve is way more helpful if we're going to ever going to get to a stage where we're actually testing our code base.
Yeah, I was looking at this one just you were speaking. But yeah, the Eric Evans book is the blue book. And then I was having this thing about blue books and red books, and then having a look at Vernon Vaughan, that's the red book. So I think that's maybe where
Correct.
I'm getting that. Maybe that's where I'm getting that from. So maybe that one's the
Yes,
red book I'm
it is
thinking.
indeed, yes. And the red book is far more practical than the blue book. The blue book is way more about the concepts. The red book is more about how to apply these concepts, which is why they pair
Interesting.
quite well together. But there's an awful lot to read in there if you get to read both of
Yeah, they're on my Amazon, frequently brought together.
them.
A little
Yes.
area with a domain-driven
Indeed.
design distilled. It's 40s. That's interesting.
Yeah, and if you've got an O'Reilly online subscription, then they're in there as well.
Yeah, I probably got them on my Kindle. I'm sure I got these somewhere, but yeah, not on my shelf. That's the problem with the Kindle. I can't put it on my shelf with my elephants and my books and have it look good when I'm doing podcasts or video calls with clients and things. So there we go. I'll have to look at that. If I haven't read it, I will have to go back and look. Cool. This has been a really interesting conversation. I really appreciate you having the time. Where can people find you online, Rob?
My pleasure. You can find me online at acrobat.com, which is incredibly difficult to spell because it's AKRABAT, for reasons that are lost in the mists of internet time. And if you need me in terms of work and stuff like that, then 19feet.com is where to find me for that.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm sure we'll see you at PHP Southwest or at a PHP conference near you at some point. I'm sure you'll be speaking at one of them before too long. So, yeah, brilliant. Thanks for joining me today. I feel like we could have gone probably for another hour. I'm sure there's a lot more we could uncover. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Beyond Blocks podcast. I've been Arthur Davis. Thanks very much.